Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches. Welcome to Baroque Bitches, your art and art history gossip podcast. I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
And we're back for another week. It's Eclipse Day.
It's all over.
Have you been singing Total Eclipse of the Heart all day long, or how's it going?
Well, now
there?
It's in my head. Well, it's over here. I'm in LA. Over here, didn't do anything. I mean, you see a little bite taken out of it, but it's not dark or anything at all. It's like sunny.
Okay,
it's hard to see too. I don't have the special glasses.
Oh shit! Yeah, you kind of needed the glasses to be able to look directly at the sun. Well,
I really shouldn't be doing this.
So they've been hyping this shit up for fucking months where I live because we're in a spot of totality, and everywhere's handing out free glasses. After, of course, my husband purchased them online, like go to the library. They're like, yeah, you want to.
Did a lot of people come from other, I've heard it's like, we're getting ready for so many people that come from other countries.
Yeah. I mean, they really hyped it up as if a lot of people were going to be in town. I mean, they fucking closed school today.
Oh my God. It's like for the eclipse.
Yeah, wow. For the eclipse, because they thought it was going to be like this mass amount of people coming to this tiny little town. Well, definitely not. I mean, so our town's really cute. It has a little camera where you can see like the downtown circle area. And there were a shit ton of people there. But it's not like closing down highways, you know, like when it's not like when, you know, Paul Simon's headlining at the Hollywood Bowl or there's a Laker game in Los Angeles. It was literally like, oh, there's a little bit more cars. Like, things aren't shutting down and it's not taking hours to get from A to B. But I will say 10 out of 10 experience. It was so fucking cool. We, you know, my husband was so cute. He was so excited going outside, checking on the sun every 15 minutes. How's it doing? Honey, checking I can see. He's like, I can see it in my glasses. Like, it's starting to look like a bite is taken out of it. And he's like getting all excited. And he sets up lawn chairs with a little blanket. And he's like, Selma, you know, she can sit here and Diego can sit in the, like, he had it all planned out.
Aww,
and he's like, we could have Eclipse drinks and we could do, like, you know, getting so into it. And I'm like, if you wanted to do all this, we really should have had a little bit more planning, but it's okay to, in the final hour, that you're deciding to do all this. Well, it was so cool. We go outside 10 minutes before it's like getting dusky and darky, kind of. Oh, and we watch, you know, for in our glasses, fucking nighttime. And then at this spot,
so cool,
when the moon is totally in front of the sun, you can take your glasses off. And it looks like a sparkling silver, shiny ring, you know, around a dark circle. And it's just so weird. Like, you know, it was dark enough that our solar powered lights came on outside and it's dark in the middle of the day. And there's this weird, like, glowing ring in the sky. It was, and Diego's so cute. He takes his glasses off and he goes, I love it.
Aw, Diego. Yeah. Hey.
It was a really cool experience. Definitely travel worthy. I don't know about coming from, like, foreign country travel worthy, but like maybe you take the day off, do a cute little day trip to somewhere you already would have wanted to go.
Or if
you're the adventurous type and you're like, let me go check out the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, I heard that there was some like small businesses in Texas and stuff like that. We're getting ready and we got shirts made and we got a special burger that's our blackout burger.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, we went out to dinner on Saturday. The restaurant had an eclipse themed cocktail.
Hell yeah.
And it, yeah, so it was a whole thing. It was cool. We're nice. Stoked.
Yeah. But yeah. So the big, sun getting the spotlight.
Big week for the sun and the moon, for sure.
Totally.
But I'm ready.
Moon and the sun.
I'm glad that it's over. Let's get rid of this weird energy that's been happening.
Yeah.
Is that a Santa cup?
Yes, this is my mom got me and my husband Santa and Mrs. Claus cups.
Oh,
so this is the man.
It is. It's literally April, but I'm glad that you have your fictitious.
Yes. I'm about Christmas all year, man. Yeah. I'm down for it. Sure, I love the magic. I don't care. You want to come out 3-4 months earlier? I don't care. That's lovely. It's wonderful, magical time.
Listen, Diego, my son is still riding out the joy of Christmas with that Amazon catalog. It's still on the kitchen table. And I want this for Christmas. I'm like, okay, it's fucking April, but put it on the list.
Yeah,
we'll glad we're talking it. About. No problem.
We'll get everything done early.
We'll get it 8 months from now.
Dude, I'm down for it. I was totally a Santa kid. And probably believed in, I did not want the magic to end. I right. probably believed in him a little bit later than most kids do. And if you are a child watching this, Santa is real. Believe.
If you're a child, go find your parent and ask them if it's okay that you're listening to this.
Yeah. Go find your person.
But you're grown up.
Yeah. But yeah, I was definitely, and my sister, Corey. He ruined it for me. I know.
I always had to pretend I knew that he wasn't real when inside I was like, dying inside.
Can't tell we're both the little one. We're both the youngest kids in our family.
I mean, yeah, and there's the debate of like, do we do the Santa with the kids? And like,
yeah.
People telling stories of feeling betrayed by their parents. Like, oh, you lied to me.
But you don't. You also don't want to be the kid that ruins it for everybody at school.
Well, and I feel like, I don't know. It's part of being a child is like having an imagination. And then part of being growing up is slowly realizing that the world sucks.
Everything's
fake.
None
of this shit is real.
It's all fake.
But I mean, so sue me for wanting to keep the magic alive.
Yeah, whatever. No. And I'll
pay for his therapy later. It's fine.
I always, too. I'm so bad. Sorry, Corey, if you're listening, my sister, my older sister. Because she's one of, I'm not going to lie to my kids kind of thing. But I'm always right. like, so what did Santa get you for Christmas? Sorry, I don't care.
Oh my God, do they do Santa?
Energy. No, they don't do Santa at their house. But I'm like, this one's very Santa. This one's very Santa.
Shh, your parents don't believe in him. That's why they're naughty and not getting presents.
Yeah, you don't see them getting presents from Santa. Santa came to me to give you this one. I'm a bad aunt. I'm not an aunt.
No, that's what aunts are for. That's what aunts are for.
I so remember, too, my little niece, when she came over. We had a little charcuterie board, and my sister's really super healthy. Like, good for them for being health conscious. Blah, blah, blah.
Right, right, right.
Not at Auntie Chelsea's house. We're not healthy in Auntie Chelsea's house. So I had this big old thing of cheese. She's not really supposed to eat cheese. And then she was just kind of like looking at me with full puppy dog kind of situation.
Like, can I have it?
Give it to me. Of like, here's some cheese. And then as soon as she took it, she's like, I need more.
God. See, that's like, what happens with the kids. If you got to just let them give them the fucking cheese.
Sorry. You know? Sorry, mom. You have to deal with the aftermath of probably her eating too much cheese. Sorry.
It's going to be stinky over there.
It's going to be stinky. But I couldn't resist. So if this woman wants cheese, she's going to get cheese from me. I will never deny somebody cheese.
Yeah. No. God, no.
Oh my God.
Wow. Sorry. Well, there's definitely some themes of like parenting issues. Oh, in this episode. Yeah.
Mom and dad.
Daddy wasn't there. No, it definitely, there's definitely some themes of that, unfortunately. So we'll segue right in. But before I segue in, I'm going to do a little warning. So I do want to preface this episode at the very, very beginning with a disclaimer. This episode today has multiple retellings of sexual assault. And the unfortunate truth is that if you're a female listener, you likely have had some sort of instance of sexual assault. And this is our reality, but we honor how traumatic it is and want you to know that you may want to skip this episode if these themes are at all triggering for you. And also, we love you.
And yeah. We love and support you, and you're amazing and brave.
And we get it.
Yeah, we fucking totally get it.
And we'll see you next episode.
But. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's the disclaimer. Are we ready?
I'm ready.
To visualize.
Let's go.
Okay. This is it. This is truly it. This is the last time I take a commission. Every time it seems my work is praised upon my agreement to accept a commission work, but then the details to follow bring me such a deep-seated, undying anger. Do you think a man would have to endure such scrutiny? To have to price their work prior to its completion? To have to send a drawing of the work's intention? It's preposterous. Why must I always prove time and time again my talent? Because I'm a woman? What's in a man anyways, except lies and deceit? I have never once created a work where repetition is evident. Every piece of new invention, not even one hand repeated. All these years of tolerating such badgery. Tell this gentleman I want 500 ducats for both. He can show them to the whole world, and should he find anyone who does not think the paintings are worth 200 scudi more, I won't ask him to pay me the agreed price. I must caution your most illustrious lordship that when I ask a price, I don't follow the custom in Naples. I'm a Roman, and therefore I shall act always in Roman. Signed, Artemisia Gentileschi. All right, now let's get to work. I'll show them what a woman can do. So welcome to Artemisia Gentileschi. Who runs the world? Girls.
Yes! Oh, I already know her fucking stuff.
Dude,
I'm pissed off right with her.
Oh my god, I know.
Oh wow.
So have you ever heard of Artemisia prior to this cute little pod situation?
Unfortunately, not so much. She's clouded by all the other Renaissance painters, the Italian Renaissance.
You mean
painters.
You mean the ones with the penises? With
the penises, yeah, yeah, those ones, the penis ones.
I mean, I hadn't either. Thanks, Sonoma State. Actually, I'm not even sure that I studied Italian art history at Sonoma, but I did study abroad in Italy, in Florence. So, like, dude. Cal State Firenze. Come on.
Damn.
She's a Florentine artist too. Like that's where she, so we'll get there. But so if you don't know who she is, do not feel bad. For those new to the pod, this is very much a low brow art history lesson. No judgment here. It's for everybody. Hope, you know. Even if just like art, you know, or you're just trying to get into it. It's intimidating for you.
Yeah.
Let's just, yeah.
This is the tea. And then you're going to be really cool at the party when some guy starts talking about, Titian. Haven't you heard of the greatest female painter of all time? I was like, yeah, I heard her. Yeah, I know. Titian.
So you're going to sound really fucking cool at the party. No,
you are going to be, the coolest. Yeah. And I think we got some new followers and they gave like college student vibes. So drop this to your history professor.
Do you know about this?
Did you know about Artemisia Gentileschi? Huh?
Why aren't we learning about her? Why?
Why?
She don't have a penis.
So she's referred to many, many times as the most famous female painter of the 17th century, which I mean, not to downplay that as an accomplishment or anything, but it just needs to be said that there aren't many female artists exactly dominating any sort of art space prior to the 20th century. And women's rights weren't exactly a priority back then. And honestly, it's even questionable if they're a priority now.
Yeah.
Like when we live in a...
We're kind of going back there, I think.
We're kind of going backwards. Yeah. Like abortion rights are under scrutiny. If you do proceed with pregnancy, the medical world is so vastly funded for men.
Come on, California, y'all.
Well, even when I was in California, I would like have something like my heart racing when I woke up and gasping for air. And I'd tell my doctor and she'd be like,
ovaries.
A lot of weird things happen when you're pregnant. Like, we don't know. I don't get it. So it's like, wait, I'm the one having the babies. Shouldn't there be some funding for women's health, like more than the men? Because we keep the, well, whatever. I'm not going to get too far.
We're preaching to the choir out here.
I know. Well, today's story is not about abortion, but women's rights are definitely on my mind. So let's get into some ASL, shall
age,
we?
Sex, location.
Age, sex, location. Give me a who. Give me a what. When, where, why, context. So we're going to late 16th, early 17th century Rome. And Rome, if you want to. You'll remember this from our Caravaggio episode. And if you haven't checked it out, it's our second episode and it's available. So go have a cute little listen on your way to work.
Good one. It's dark.
During your woodworking session, or while you're at home knitting, or while you're at home with your sexy balloons. That's a shout out to our lunar fans. We're still looking for a lunar for the Coons episode. Yeah. And if you're wondering what a lunar is, check out the Van Gogh episode.
But for some reason.
The point is, we don't care what you do while you listen, but you are also cute doing whatever the fuck you're doing listening. So we love it. Thank you. So anyways, back to Rome. Rome during this time is super fucking brutal. It's a time when people are like sword fighting in the streets. Poverty is really prevalent. There's famine, the plague, war, church, Catholics, all up in your shit. And yes, lots of that. And like, thank God these people didn't have WebMD because they probably would have been freaking the fuck out at every given second. And on top of that, I'm pretty sure it's still a time where your barber is also your surgeon because they had the most experience with, like, cutting things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You trust your barber way more than the doctor, dude. The doctor will kill you. The barber might actually help you out a little bit.
Sew you back up after they cut you open.
Yeah.
So as far as art context goes, we're coming off of the Renaissance that was basically taking these gnarly religious and mythological stories and making them look very serene and idyllic. But Baroque BBs, the thing is, the stories behind these paintings were often super brutal. I mean, you could have things like rape, murder, incest happening, and the figures in the paintings look like they just had a nice little nap and are now thinking of a little snack to go with it. They're just like so happy and contented.
Lots of very sexy Jesus, because, we want to make sure that he's hot up on that cross.
Lots of just like hot, sexy saints. It's like they're sexy, but they're like,
but they take their skin off. Oh,
happy about it. I mean, it's the point is that they're not very dramatic imagery, and let's take these stories and make them look like serene and idealized. And I think the point and the goal of the Catholic Church with funding paintings like this is to make people want to be in them. Like, you want to be next to these godliness. Like, this is where you're going. Doesn't it look wonderful? Mm-hmm. Well, now we're getting into the Baroque, which was like, wait a second. These stories are fucked up. Let's make them look as fucked up as they are. Let's get some drama. No more light, smirky smiles while heads are being chopped off. Let's make it bloody and dramatic and evocative. So let's make the figures have real emotion in a way that make people relate to them.
Yeah. Mary's sad. Everyone's sad.
Yeah.
Everyone's dying, getting their heads chopped off.
It's like a brutal, it's almost like it's reflecting the climate of the time, like what's going on in the streets and shit. So people looking at them, and the goal is really like the same across the board with both movements for the Catholics, give us more money, right?
Yes.
So the common thread is definitely funding the Catholic Church, but you probably could have guessed that.
Yeah. Smart. And if you can, I feel like if you can relate to something, you'll buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if there's a girl on TV that, you know, I can look like that. I can be like that. I can fucking do that. I won't buy her $60 fucking thing. Why did I buy this?
I myself have definitely purchased products from Instagram people that I follow.
100%.
I mean, you give me the 20% off coupon and you tell me that something works.
Yeah.
Girl.
Stick to, if you are going to buy something on Instagram, stick to small businesses and there you go.
Maybe our Patreon.
Oh, hello there, you beautiful creature. Looks like you can't get enough of the Baroque Bitches Art History Gossip Podcast. Do you want more juicy tea? Join our Patreon for exclusive access to bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, exclusive voting power, digital downloads, fun merch, and more. Become one of us, by going to patreon.com/BaroqueBPodcast or clicking the link on our website, BaroqueBPodcast.com, or clicking the link on our Instagram at baroque.b.podcast. Thank you for your support. We couldn't do any of this stuff without you. We love you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, who are
we
mom
love
and
you.
We love you. So, who are mom and dad? Mommy is Prudencia Montoni. And mom is only 18 when she marries dad, who would have been in his 30s at the time.
Oh, okay.
As a child.
Okay.
So who is dad? B. Orazio Gentileschi. So daddy was a painter.
Oh, daddy.
Like maybe sort of like a CB level celeb type status. So pretty up there. And dad's born in Pisa, but moves to Rome and is sort of like in a self-discovery phase in his 20s. And it's here that he meets a few buddies that become integral parts of our girls' lives. So Agostino Tassi and Michelangelo de Merisi da Caravaggio. So yes, we're in Rome around the same time Caravaggio is throwing artichokes. Throwing artichokes at people and trying to cut guys' dicks off.
Yeah.
But he also is really the one to revolutionize art at the time. And you know what I couldn't get out of my head when I was writing notes up for this and I read Caravaggio revolutionizes art world. You know that scene in the movie Orange County with Jack Black?
Which scene?
So he like goes into the library and the librarian asks him something and he's like, do you want to get naked and start the revolution?
Dude, such a good fucking movie. I think I that put like, Orange County on the map, dude. I
like, love that movie.
It's such a good movie.
Oh my God. I think directed by Tom Hanks's son, I'm pretty much.
Yeah, pretty sure.
And Jack Black plays the drugged out paranoid brother to Tom Hanks's son. And
so Jack Black is definitely one of those where
he's a national treasure.
Absolutely. 100%. He is definitely one of those like underdog hot people of like totally 100% fuckable.
Oh, a million percent.
Many others, which we could probably get into at some point, of like the
metalhead hotties.
Yes, he is definitely totally of like, oh, daddy.
Oh yeah, hottie with a body. Oh my God,
100%. He is amazing.
But yeah, so anyways. Where was I? I totally got sidetracked.
Revolution. Caravaggio revolutionizing.
Yeah. So speaking of revolutions. So, yeah. So he's really is a part of this shift in the art that we talked about just minutes ago. Renaissance no more. It's Baroque, bitches. So he's baroquing it up. And you can tell a Baroque painting by the drama and the subject matter. And typically the timing and the choice the artist makes of what point in a story to tell. So
the bloody part.
Yeah. Like they're,
or they
you know,
kill you.
Right. Instead of, you know, depicting Mike David gearing up to kill Goliath, it's like, no, let's show after Goliath is
him
decapitated.
Bashing.
Yeah. Like, let's get the naughty part. Right?
We want dismemberment.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. But you can also tell by, you know, the lighting. So more contrast is the theme. We're talking like Scenester MySpace days contrast with that heavy exposure, the darkest dark, and the lightest light you can get buddying up together.
Yeah. You know, when you have to go out in the snow of like, oh, snow's out. Gotta go out there.
Let me
get
a picky. Let me take a picture. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we call it chiaroscuro or tenebrism. He didn't invent it, but it's definitely very prevalent. So Orazio is more of a mannerist style painter, which I thought I talked about in the Caravaggio episode. And I said, like, fuck the mannerists. But I have to take it back. I'm wrong. I'm learning more about these painters. And mannerists are pretty cool.
Yeah.
They take Renaissance paintings and make them, like, more bizarre and strange and weird.
Yeah.
But not Orazio's. His paintings are more, like, boring. Just, like, not as exciting of
not
the mannerists.
As, like, stylized as a typical mannerist.
Yeah, like, there's a mannerist painting. Oh, is it? Who did it? It's, like, man that's made of fruit.
You know what I'm talking about? The fruit man. I totally know the fruit man.
That's a mannerist painting. But so his aren't, like, that fantastical and exciting. But he's definitely considered more of a mannerist painter. And like elongated forms, and there is a bit of exaggeration, a bit of like fantasy almost that enters the chat, sort of deal.
Giuseppe Archimboldo.
Archimboldo, yeah, that yeah. One, the one with the fruit man.
Fruit man.
Thank you.
That oh, they're so cool.
So cool. But yeah, Orazio's not that cool. He's like whatever, yeah. A little bit. But and he sees Caravaggio's paintings, and he's eating the shit up. They become friends and they start hanging out, drinking, partying together.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Throwing artichokes.
He's partying, then he meets Prudencia, which is her mom. And so Artemisia Gentileschi is born July 8th, 1593. And she would have been a Cancer.
Feely
moon child. So Cancers are shielded by hard external shells. They're the crab symbol. At first, these crabs may be perceived as cold or distant. With time, though, cancers reveal their gentle nature, genuine compassion, and mystical capabilities. Mm. Just don't be surprised if it takes a while to get to know them. So I definitely think the hard shell serves our girl well. Foreshadowing. Because life is pretty, like, well, difficult at this time for everybody. So you need that hard shell to, like, survive in this time. It's just a brutal time to be alive. But we don't know too much about the childhood, but I'm sure it was sort of fucked up because, you know, it's just a fucked up time in the world.
Yeah, and dad's hanging out with Caravaggio, dude. You know it's going to be weird and dark.
Ooh, I know. That's not what you want. So, yeah. And then shit gets even more fucked up because when Mitzia, that's her nickname that she goes by, Mitzia is just 12 years old. Her mom dies giving birth to her younger brother.
Bummer.
So, yes, ooh, it's never good when a parent dies, especially in those early stages. And on top of this, Mitzia had to take on fucking mom's shit, like all her chores and stuff at a really young age.
Yeah. But one she's thing, the woman of the house now, I guess. Right. Awesome. Awesome.
Right. Great.
Cool.
I'm 12.
Fucking 12.
Awesome.
Dicks.
That's what I wanted to be doing with my time. So dad does what most parents at this time would do and starts training her to be in his craft, which just happens to be a painter.
Oh.
But this isn't like a cute, oh, my daughter's going to be an artist and I want to support her type way. It's more so thought that he's using his kids to do work and labor, just like a farmer would have their kids like working in the fields.
Yeah.
These kids are prepping paints and canvases and learning how to be a part of his workshop. Mm-hmm. Because you guys remember, this is a time where you had a workshop if you were a working artist where other people would come in and prep all this shit for you and even sometimes paint on your behalf and paint in your style. And then you come in and like sign off on it if it's good enough to be having, you know, made in your workshop and you take credit for it kind of deal.
Yeah, it's like a team. Yeah,
it's like a team situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clear that she really loves painting and that she's has this just natural gift from very early on. She's definitely outshining her brothers, for sure.
Yes.
And we do have to wonder if this is a passion for her or just sort of a like proximity thing, because women at the time were really protected. You didn't see women just like out in the streets.
Yeah.
They were shielded from society. So while brothers are out there like gallivanting and what have you, Mitzia's in the workshop painting. Yeah.
There's nothing else for it to do.
Right. Like women were literally like locked away.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't have been like entirely shielded because like we just said, we got some of the baddest Baroque bad boys, Caravaggio. On many occasions, apparently would come over and encourage her to paint.
Amazing.
And actually like be like, yeah. So it would have been commonplace for her to see him and they would have met many a times, it's thought. Yeah, pretty rad, right?
Yeah.
But still, her dreams of like becoming a working painter would have very much been a pipe dream, like very unattainable. There's no example to follow here of another woman who's, you know, painting famously that she can be like, oh, it's achievable.
Yeah.
But she is smart and she's educated and she knows and understands that she's very talented and she's the shit. Mm. So let's look up some early work. Look up Susanna and the Elders.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this painting will be brought up in every single fucking conversation you hear about our girl. And this is because it really is iconic.
Yeah.
And this story behind it is really just so fucked up. So let's talk about the story for a second. So Susanna is a young and beautiful married maiden.
I think a maiden is an unmarried woman,
okay,
right?
Okay, well, yeah. I don't know. Well, okay, then she's a married woman.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
One day
it's like a hottie, like a little hottie. But I see in this painting, like, I'm going to get pissed off.
Yeah.
I think you are. I'm ready to get pissed off right now.
Are you ready?
Yes.
You're just like ready to direct your rage at something.
Let's go.
Well, it's important that she's married. So it's an important part of the story. So one day, Susanna is bathing outside. Like you do. Like at her house. I don't know if that's just like ancient times. There's just backyard baths. It sounds nice. Maybe a creek or something. But the point is she's naked. She's outside in plain sight. And so these two well-respected old dudes are walking by. And they come up and see her. And they're just like, holy fucking shit. Okay. Hide your boner. Let's think of a plan. So they come up with this brilliant, shitty, disgusting plan. And they say, let's tell her that if she doesn't fuck us, we'll tell everybody that we saw her fucking some other young dude under a tree. Adultery is punishable by death. And we're old as fuck and everybody likes us. So everybody will believe us, not her. And then she'll have to fuck us. Oh my God, perfect. And so they go up Susanna and they tell her, okay, so you have to fuck us or we're going to get you killed pretty much. But Susanna anchors God and doesn't sleep with them. A trial ensues. Of course, everybody believes the old fuckers.
Old fucking idiot dudes.
Yeah. Okay. But then Susanna like prays or whatever. And Daniel, because this is a book of Daniel.
Yeah.
Daniel, he's like, no, let me cross-examine the elders. And they get caught in a lie because they never thought to like corroborate their story of what kind of tree they saw her fucking this young dude under. And then they get sentenced to death and they die. So great. Right?
Okay, great.
Yeah. So that's the story behind the painting.
Hell also, yeah. Bible. Yes.
It's another nice children's Bible story.
I kind of like that Bible story, though. I don't mind it. That one's a good one. The guy dies. Yes. Yeah.
So you'll notice her choice of subject matter is very intentional and strategic. But so this story had been painted many, many times before. But up until this point, because dudes were always painting it, Susanna would be depicted as like a sultry, sexy lady, a temptress.
Yeah.
So yeah, just another Tuesday, right? Where, oh, you got attacked because what were you doing wearing that skirt sort of deal?
What were you doing looking so fucking voluptuous?
Why, you were asking your for fault. It, right? You were asking for it. So instead of like holding the disgusting man accountable for not being able to keep his pee in his pants, well, in Nizia's version, the woman definitely is looking innocent and disgusted. Mm-hmm. And she's naked, but it's not in a provocative way. It's the like, dude, I just farted. Can you leave me alone in my bath, please? Sort of way. I'm not trying. This wasn't. And men are finally definitely depicted as being like predatory.
Yeah, they look so evil. Yeah, they're evil and in the shadows and like grabbing her and ugh.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not saying all men are gross. It's just this is the common portrayal, not even portrayal. This is a common reality in the media everywhere you go. I mean, I've been sexually assaulted. I've been verbally attacked, and I've always sort of come back to thinking it was my fault in some way, shape, or form because of how we've been socialized.
Yeah,
and that's not okay. That's not how it is, and it is our reality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've experienced it too.
Yeah. And like, most of you have experienced that. So you know that you always have to have your guard up at all times around fucking everybody.
Yeah. It's especially like walking down the street and it's like the moment you're walking down the street and some guy's like, ow, or catcalling, and you're like, no thanks. And they're like, bitch, you know?
Fuck you then, bitch.
Yeah, and it's like, okay. And I'm like,
well, then leave my ugly ass alone.
Right? Like, God.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. We could go for a walk. Oh, we could go stories,
on and on
yeah.
about that, but we won't. We won't. We won't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys know. You guys know. You've been there, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so the crazy thing about this painting, on top of all of that, is that she would have only been 17 years old when she painted it. So fucking mind blowing, right? And people are obsessed with that one boob. You know, at this time, boobs, and not in like a gross way, like people are just like, wow, it looks natural. At this time, boobs often looked like they were just like bolted on, like on a car, you know, like they did not look
guys just don't
natural.
Know what boobs look like.
I yeah. didn't even think they're like so obsessed with them. Yeah, they just like look like bolted on boobs. But this one, there's gravity, there's dimples, it's natural looking.
Yeah.
She's like a very nice natural boob.
Yeah. She looks like a natural lady. Yeah.
Yeah. So we can already see the insert of Mitya's views on women versus men. In her interpretation of like societal standards, right? She mm-hmm. knows that the portrayals up until this point have been wrong and that the conversation being created is wrong. And she's correcting that in this image. So,
dude, this is fucking huge for this time period, dude. Like that, yeah. that just wasn't even. We are sinners, and we are just right? under men, and we got to do what they say.
It would have been fucking revolutionary. And so the other thing we need to talk about, women at the time were seen as property. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes daughters were literally kept safe away from society, locked away in their rooms, or sent to convents so no one could deflower them. Because not to protect them, but more so, once they were deflowered, they were not valuable anymore.
Yeah.
They could not be traded for dowries or other property. So, and
honestly,
they would just,
I think I would totally go to the convent of like, send me to the nuns. I would like, rather just be a nun than deal with this shit.
I don't know if I could handle the convent. I think I'd get kicked out of the convent.
We would probably do a little sneaking around. I don't know.
I don't know. And then you get murdered or fucking, such a crazy time. But so Artemisia was stowed away in her room, but then dad's bringing over his like Caravaggio-esque type friends. So here's the thing. It's cool that she got to meet Caravaggio, right? But the more and more I think about it, the more and more I'm like, wait, Caravaggio, the painter of darkness? The guy getting into night fights? The guy blacking out, wasted all the time. This is who you're letting into your house with your daughter. Well, yeah. So that doesn't exactly add up, right? And one of his other shitty friends is Agostino Tosi. So dad thinks it's a brilliant idea to have Agostino train Artemisia in painting.
Okay.
And the lessons are going great. She's learning. And then one day, you can see where I'm going with this. Agostino just can't keep the pee in the pants. And he attacks Artemisia. And Artemisia tries to fight him off. She claws and scratches at him. And at one point, she says she grabs his penis and rips flesh from it. But he's too... Oh, my God. But he's too strong and overpowers her and violently rapes her.
Damn.
And afterwards, she grabs a knife and threatens to kill him for dishonoring her, but he shields it as it's being thrown at him. So she likely would have been like 17 or 18 when this happens. Yeah.
Dude, come on.
Right? Fucking horrible, right?
Yeah.
Like, this really just shows that no woman was safe, even in the safety of their own home.
Yeah.
But I definitely think like dad could have been more aware of the type of friends he's keeping company with. And it's important to highlight rape at the time was not viewed as we see it today. We see it today as like a horrible, violating act against women and their bodies.
That's going to traumatize you for the rest of your
forever,
life.
Right? Well,
Was this more of like, oh, he ravished me?
It was more like not a victim situation. It wasn't thought of in like, oh, she's the victim. It was much like, you should not.
Like, you should have anticipated this, young child. You should have anticipated this situation and made yourself aware that you should not be left alone with a predator.
Right. Like, it's like, all that. It's a little bit like.
Even though my dad fucking hired this guy.
It's a little bit like, oh, all women are temptresses, yeah, and that. But the biggest crime is not to the female's body. It's to the family's honor and to their standing in society.
Yeah.
So it would be like a huge fucking thing to dishonor somebody's family.
Yeah.
And typically it's remedied by marriage. So,
no.
Yeah. But so this very much is in line with that victim complex where you think it's your fault. Yeah. She thinks it's her fault that this happens in a way. And Augustino comes back and basically says, look, I'll marry you, but you have to keep fucking me. So despite how violated she may have been feeling, she agrees to this for the sake of the family. Yeah, yeah. She has no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, eventually, Dad finds out about the relationship and decides to take Augustino to trial to force him to marry Artemisia and avenge the family honor.
Okay.
So this trial goes on for 8 months. And I mean, a lot of people are dragged into this. And the crazy part about it is the format of the trial is really placing Artemisia as like the perpetrator. So Augustino goes up and basically says, she's lying. She's crazy. She's a prostitute. Her dad's selling her. Her dad's fucking her. Her aunts, her mom, all these women in this family are prostitutes. And I never said I would marry her. But then Mizia gets up there and she retells every part of what happened over and over and over again. Well, at the time, it was thought that torture could be used to gain a true testimony.
Oh.
Almost like a 17th century lie detector situation. So
The question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's just like that. So Mizia sacrifices her painter's hands for this when they place her thumbs in thumb screws.
Aye.
So a thumb screw device basically looks like a vise with a screw in the center of it, with two long, flat, skinny rectangular pieces are placed on either side of your thumb.
Oh.
And the screw in the center tightens these pieces together. So your thumbs are slowly and brutally being squeezed by those rectangular pieces. Yes. So while she's being tortured, she says time and time again, it's true. It's true. It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
And then she looks at Augustino and says, this is the ring you gave me, and these are your promises.
Ooh. Dude, this bitch is so fucking cool. Like, first of all, like, first you get assaulted. Now your thumbs are fucking broken, but you're so pissed that you're like, worth it.
Do
fucking
it.
Worth
Put
it.
Put the fucking screws Put on.
Put the
my
things
thumbs.
On. Put me to the fucking question. I'm fucking right.
I got this.
Dude. Oh my God. Hell yeah. I'm such a fan already.
Oh my God. She's so cool.
And she's a fucking teenager. Like,
yeah. I mean, so the life expectancy at the time was like your 30s. So like that's middle true. Age she's at this point. Age. But, well, Augustino basically gets caught in lies throughout the trial. He actually is already married to another woman that he had raped and had to marry when he was caught. And he has past records of like incest and other sexual assault. Yeah. He may have possibly murdered a wife before.
Put him away.
Yeah.
Oh my
so
God. Set him on fire.
Oh
Let's do it.
So basically, he is convicted and sentenced to being exiled from Rome, but it's not really enforced and he does come back. But the point is that the family honor of the Gentileschi family is sort of restored enough to the point where Artemisia can marry. Oh. So it's like, yay, your prize is being able to marry some other asshole, which she does. But this whole experience is thought to influence the rest of her life's work.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at two paintings, Judith beheading Holofernes by Caravaggio, and then Judith beheading Holofernes by Artemisia.
I think I've seen this comparison.
Yeah, this is, I mean, there are some paintings that are well talked about, and this, I mean, it has to be. It's so good.
Yeah.
So you may remember this art piece from the Caravaggio episode, but I'm going to tell the story from the Book of Judith again, which is Old Testament vibes, but how they keep track of so many fucking stories.
There's so many, dude.
How do you guys know so much about this show? But basically, the town Judith is from, Bethulia, is under siege by an Assyrian army. She's a widow. And then in these times, widows were committed to wearing like widow dress, which I can only imagine screams unavailable to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, so she decides to heroically take that widow dress off and get all fucking hot to
hell yeah. Just
with the intent of destroying Holofernes, this Assyrian general.
Yes.
So she goes into his little tent and it's basically like, listen. I know the key to destroying Bethulia. I will help you. Let's get wasted. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, this is totally fine. Totally to plan. Incredible. Yeah, I'm just being spontaneous right now. I have no plans.
Yeah, so fun. No ulterior motive. Oh, you're at war with my hometown. Don't worry about it.
No, I love that. I love that for you. I love that for you.
Well, she gets him super fucking wasted. And then just when they're about to do it, she cuts that motherfucker's head off. So, I mean, her vagina and womanly powers basically save the town of Bethulia. And bitch has such a wop that she didn't even need to have sex with that guy.
Yeah, she doesn't even use it.
She doesn't even have to use it. Just in her arsenal.
Like, yeah.
Just like teases it and fucking saves the fucking town.
So this
story is painted over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But typically in Renaissance paintings, the moments leading up to this would be painted or the moments just after. And Caravaggio, being the Baroque bad boy that he is, decides to paint the decapitating Holofernes. And it's bloody and it's dramatic and it's totally up his alley. But you'll notice in his version, the blood is squirting out in like straight lines.
And it's
not at all convincing.
Mm-hmm.
And Judith looks to be timid and almost like
she's kind of like, ew, oh my god,
she's like, oh, what am I doing?
Fuck. I don't want to do this. Ooh, it's nasty. I'm a lady.
I don't know.
I am too beautiful for this.
The way that her arms are positioned is kind of awkward.
It doesn't really make sense for her to be chopping, sawing somebody's fucking head off.
Yeah, exactly. So when you look at Artemisia's version on Holofernes, the maid servant is like holding that motherfucker down. The blood is spewing out and dripping down the sheets. There's convincing gravity.
Yeah.
Judith's leg is like up on Holofernes, like holding that motherfucker down. And you can feel the tension and you can feel the gravity and you can understand the sawing.
Yeah.
Like it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's like she's like, I don't want to get the blood on me, but also like, I'm going to fucking saw this guy's head off. She's got muscles. Like she is like, he is so uncomfortable and so like timid and vulnerable. And like, he knows it's over for him. It looks like, looks like he's given up. Yeah.
He knows what's happening.
Yeah.
But you really see the womanly teamwork.
Totally. Oh yeah, no, we have to get together
and pin this guy down. Yeah,
exactly. We just have to murder this guy right now. No big deal.
So good.
Yeah. So this is really why we love her. She has this captivating way and sensibility of, you know, telling the same story, but in a way that has different eccentricities and nuances highlighted in a way that we really haven't seen before.
I like it.
Yeah. So, and you know, a lot of art historians will definitely create a dialogue that she's working out her trauma through the painting, and okay, that maybe she even paints this as a response to the rape, knowing it will be displayed as a sort of vengeful moment of like,
don't fuck with me again.
Yeah. Bye. Motherfucker, look what I can do.
Totally. On top of getting, on top of like going in and getting my thumbs all fucked up and like, okay, fine, totally worth the pain, is totally worth it. On top of that, I'm gonna like put a period on this situation by painting this scary ass painting, this super brutal, like, do not fuck with me painting. Yeah. Don't.
Right. And it's even rumored that the man who commissioned it, that they were like afraid of it, had to keep it covered.
Do not piss us off.
No, don't. Like, just don't
chop
do
your
it.
Fucking head off.
So she does get married to Pier Antonio Stiazzetsi, who was a small time, not as important or largely known painter. And together they get the fuck out of Rome and move to Florence. And from here, this marriage wasn't really like the most romantic, passionate vibes. It was more like her husband just liked to spend money, specifically her money. But at the time, women couldn't like own property or run a business. And so she's sort of using him just as much as he is using her, because she needs, you know, a way to run an art business. And he's fine with it, so long as he can just like have this expensive taste. But like a fucking dick.
Okay. Here you go, trophy husband.
But she does start blowing the fuck up in Florence. And you'll notice when, like, during this time that she uses herself a lot as a model. And it's thought that this was not only economical, but also that she was like shamelessly self-promoting in a way, like Rembrandt does.
Yeah,
like, we wanted to gain notoriety, and it works.
Yeah.
And she's painting a lot, getting commissions from really important patrons, just like our amazing patrons. So these ones are key in her success, just like you are really key to ours. So thank you very much for your patronage.
You love me.
So she's getting commissions from big players like Cosimo II de' Medici, Grand Duke of Tuscany. That would have been a huge deal. And she's hanging with really big name dudes like Galileo Galilei. She's learning.
Oh, I'm just gonna go over to Galileo's house. Yeah, we're gonna like talk about later. I don't know, the world. He's got these crazy ideas about like Earth and stuff. I don't know. It's crazy. Well, yeah, well, He's cute.
I think he was gay, right?
possibly. But which is which makes sense why she'd be comfortable enough to go hang out with him.
Oh, 1,000,000% after what she's been through.
Totally. She gets it. Safe zone.
She's learning to read and write. She's playing music. She's wearing fancy dresses and basically becoming the female painter of the time.
Word.
And she's even the first female to get accepted into the Florence Artist Academy, which was a huge fucking deal. Hey. And she's doing all this shit while having fucking babies. So, yeah, girl is a multitasker. She has 5 children during this time.
Oh, my God.
But running with the theme of how difficult childbirth is and how difficult pregnancy is, 4 out of the 5 children all die. They don't make it to adulthood.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow.
To make matters more complicated, her husband and her not doing so hot. He's definitely having affairs, and she's having a very passionate and pretty obvious affair with Francesco Maria Maringhi, who was a super rich nobleman.
Bye.
Bye, Pier Antonio. But apparently Pier Antonio knew about the affair, but because he was so deep into being a sugar baby, he was fine with it. He even sends Francesco letters on the back end and is like, basically like, it's cool. I'm having affairs too. It's no big deal. Like, go ahead. Do you?
Yeah. Okay. It's Florence.
Yeah. Well, the rumors eventually spread about the affair. So Mizia and Francesco moved to Rome to sort of like evade the whole situation. They're also not doing so hot financially, and it's thought that this may have also been like a financial move. Oh. And when she gets back to Rome, she's still famous, but not really as famous as she was in Florence.
Yeah.
I mean, she's still being sought after by like cardinals and princes, and but she's not part of the papal court painters, possibly due to the affairs, the rape, the female thing.
Yeah, the whole like being a woman,
the whole like not having a dick.
Yeah, you have to do that in there to be cool with the Pope.
but also, her style is sort of like becoming passé a little bit.
Oh.
So, but the marriage is still rocky and to the point of like possibly more physical violence. It's even thought that Pier Antonio slashes the face of a male acquaintance of Artemisia. So, yeah. So, just like generally very unhinged behavior from your boy. So, finally, he gets the fuck out, leaves town, leaving Artemisia with their 5-year-old daughter, Prudencia, named after mom. So, she does move around a lot after this, sort of out of necessity. She goes to Naples. She gets integrated into the art scene there. And she's still being, like, widely sought after. But she's still having a hard time making ends meet. Painters weren't, like, unless you were, you know, Rembrandt.
Yeah.
You're not fucking
kidding. And even Rembrandt had a really hard time making money.
Right. It's a struggle.
You gotta be Rubens. Yeah, you gotta be a diplomat in the fucking politics of it all.
And Rubens too. Yeah, like exactly. And even when she does get commissioned, the people commissioning her work are like, well, are you sure it's not going to be like the other work that you just did? Can you send me like a little drawing before you do it? Can you, you know, how much is it going to be? Like, they're very inquisitive and just questioning. Like,
do you want the work or not? Do you want the painting or not? They go somewhere else.
It's not the way that business would be handled if it were with men.
Yeah.
With men, it would be like, oh my God, please, please, please paint this for me. Like, I respect you so much. I gotta have you. I gotta.
Let me house you.
Exactly.
You want whores? Exactly. Sure.
Right? I'll lie to the Pope for you. No big deal. I'll cover it up. Yeah. And so it's very.
I'll lie to the Pope.
It's very offensive that she's being asked to do this, and she, in her letters to her lovers and to the people inquiring about the commissions, expresses this. She expresses how fucking annoying it is that she's being questioned just because she's a woman.
Yeah.
Well, we might be wondering what happened to Dad. So Dad at this time moves to London, and and he's actually a court painter to Charles I. So it's interesting to see how far she goes without Dad. They're not in communication up until this point, except for him like begging her to go to London, where she finally agrees to. And it's thought that they work on this mural for the Queen's house in Greenwich.
Okay.
So let's talk more about this relationship.
Yeah.
So you'll notice I was not exactly raving about dad supporting his daughter into being an artist. And that's largely because I don't think that he was exactly supportive. I mean, he's just using her for his own benefit.
Yeah.
So when Artemisia has moments about talking about the reason she gets into art, it actually seems more having to do with the effects of mom. So you'll remember when her mom dies, she was only 12. She has to take on her work. Part of that is Artemisia had a skirt that needed lengthening. She adds fabric to the bottom of the skirt and hides the seam with embroidery work that she would have learned from her mom. And she talks about really being inspired by her mom and that being her inspiration to become an artist. So once she does start painting, she's not really at all interested in painting subjects that have been commonplace for female painters at the time, like flowers and vases and delicate items. Mm. She's painting these gnarly and impactful biblical and historical scenes, just like the men would do. Yeah. But she paints, you know, Cleopatra, who we know is a real femme fatale. She paints Judith, the slayer of Holofernes. She paints Susanna as a victim, not a seductress. All these empowering female perspective is inserted into the work, which would have been totally radical at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm totally here for this and agree that she's like a feminist icon. We can't forget that at the heart of it all, she's a brilliant and talented ahead of her time painter. Yeah. So I think what sort of happens is this big rape story overshadows her work itself. And then we forget to look at the work for just being so impactful in this other way, right?
Yeah.
But luckily, we're not the only ones who get it. The patrons knew they would get something different from her and that there was something to be valued about getting a painting of a female by a female.
Yeah.
And that's what really largely funds her career in her lifetime and makes us fucking obsessed with her now.
Yeah. You don't want those pasted on titties. You want titties from someone that has titties. Yeah, you know what, those like stones that are just kind of placed of like, right. What is that thing? Have you never even felt one? You haven't. Okay, got it.
Feels like a bag of sand.
It's like a bag of sand. Like, what? Got it. Genius movie, by the way. Absolutely genius movie.
Oh, man. So look up, this is the last painting, Self-Portrait Allegory of Painting. This is the last painting that we see in London. It is a painting literally that personifies painting as being a woman.
Yeah.
So discussion of whether it's actually her or someone else happens. I don't think it's her because she would have been in her 40s at the time. I also think she kind of always seems to have like reddish hair in the other paintings, and this one is very brunette.
Yeah.
But I mean, she's literally fucking saying like painting is a woman. Like, this is an allegory of what painting is supposed to be. And maybe even all paintings, all good paintings are done by women. Like, it's, a, you know, she's personifying the act of painting as being a woman.
I like it. Yeah.
So we don't know when Mizia dies exactly, but we do know she moves back to Naples and that there's a plague that struck and wiped out a lot of people. But anywhere from 1652 to 1658, she could have died. And she's largely forgotten after this because she's a woman. But her work and impact is not silenced for long. And she has in more recent decades come back with a fucking vengeance.
Hell yeah. Cut their fucking heads off.
I've got some really good quotes here. So I have the spirit of Caesar in the soul of a woman.
Ooh, that's even scarier than Caesar himself, dude. I'm like, okay. Please be nice to me.
Right? Please don't eat me.
Please don't chop my head off.
And the works will speak for themselves.
Yes. Wig.
Okay.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Wow. Oh, I love her. I love her so much.
She's so good, dude.
She's so good and she's so mad. I love it.
I know. To fit.
Yeah, I feel her. I fucking get it. And I feel your
story.
Yeah, if you are this is the broke bitches. If you're a bitch out there, you fucking get it.
Yeah, you
and
get
I always
it.
Feel like too. I listen to. I had this conversation the other day with like a metalhead person. Mm-hmm. There's so much gatekeeping when it comes to metal music.
Yeah,
and you're not really like. I mean, you're a woman, so like you can't really be mad.
You don't
like,
get it.
You don't know how much fucking rage and fury is inside of me all the time. I am so much more fucking metal than you are, dude. What are you just doing? Going around and like walking around with like fuckers. No fear in your heart at all. Like, dude, try bleeding for a week and surviving.
You guys wear your genitals on the outside, so you're obviously more vulnerable than we are.
Yeah. So if you know, you know. If you know what I'm talking about, you get it. Of like, yeah. You guys don't even know how full of rage we are.
I know.
And we also like are out here like looking amazing and doing so much other
killing
shit.
Killing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we're also like fucking betrayed. And so I get her rage, I get her pride, like I get her just wanting to show off too. I'm just like, yeah, no, I know.
Oh yeah,
like,
she knows she's the right shit. She knows she's the shit, and she knows that men suck, and she's like all about it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I even in the beginning, like having to say like, oh, you know, we know men like aren't all like this. Like I just even having feeling the need to like not offend a dude in saying that. Blech. Like, bleh. yeah, like if you guys aren't man enough to be okay with that statement, then like get
sorry
the fuck
about
out.
It. Sorry.
Bye.
About it. Yeah.
Right?
It's like I feel like the men that I choose to, because I'm married to one. I choose
obviously.
To surround myself with men because I like them.
Yes.
And they, when I say like, listen, like I am so fucking tired of your kind right now. It's like,
my husband
gets it.
Yeah. Like, my husband gets it.
All you can say is like, I'm here to support you. I'm sorry for my kind.
Yeah, I'm sorry for men.
And I will do my best to make it right. And but you knowing that it will never be.
Like, right.
But yeah. We can do our best for what
so,
we have right
yeah.
now.
So I guess if you're offended, men out there.
Sorry about it.
Do better. Do better.
Yeah. Sorry about your tiny penis.
Well, so when thinking about the person at the party, I mean, there's so many badass women out there, but I thought Jane Fonda, and I mostly am bringing up Jane Fonda because she has some fire quotes on marriage and female rights, and her and Lily Tomlin have fought tirelessly for workers' rights and women's rights. But she also kind of started her career out being like a very much sought after sexy lady. And not that she wasn't after, but she even has quotes saying, my identity depended on men for so long. You can be successful and still have the feeling that if you're not with a man, you don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true, and especially in the era that she, you know, started her fame in, mm-hmm. that your value is equated with like being attached to a man. But I also was listening to a Marc Maron episode, and she is interviewed by him, and she talks about her marriages and knowing that they were ending when she started having dreams about murdering her husband.
Duh.
And I just thought that was so fucking funny. Like, dude.
Seriously.
She's really funny when she talks about it.
Well, you know that like in that kind of dream theory, like people have like, oh, if you dream about your mm-hmm. teeth falling out, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, if you dream about cutting or stabbing somebody, that means that you're trying to cut them out of your life. Like, or,
oh, wow.
or even if they, because I had one, years ago when I was kind of in the midst of breaking up with somebody.
Right.
I had this crazy dream. It was so real of like me and my ex at the time that or my boyfriend at the time, now ex, but that he kept like slicing me, like slicing my skin. And ew. I asked one of my friends knew about dreams and studied dream stuff. I'm right. Like, what does that mean? It was so vivid and so like, this is something important. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, you're cutting him out of your life. He's slicing you. Uh-huh. Yeah, you're cutting him out of your life. Oh, so God. I feel like if you are dreaming about, and it's not saying like you're going to go murder that person. Please don't murder people.
No.
Kill each other. But even though this whole time I'm like, cut his head off. But if you are dreaming about like stabbing or murdering or cutting or somebody else, or somebody else is cutting or stabbing you, is done. We're done with that. That's it. That's over. A toxic person. That this is the eclipse energy. This is where you're supposed to leave people behind that's not serving you. So so I totally get where Jane Fonda's coming from with her.
Yeah. That's like perfect example. Yeah. So to end with a strong Jane Fonda quote, you can run the office without a boss. You cannot run an office without secretaries. Bitch.
Oh, I like that. Right? Oh, I gotta tell that. My mom was a secretary forever. I gotta tell that to my mom. That's a good one.
She'll like that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Artemisia, that's our girl.
Huge fan. She's my spirit
animal, right?
Yeah, I'm taking that one. I like it.
So we are on Instagram. Baroque.b.podcast. Go to our website, baroque.b.podcast.com.
baroquebpodcast.com.
Oh, sorry. baroquebpodcast.com. We have stickers. Most importantly, we're on Patreon. Chelsea's been making the extra videos for you guys, doing a tutorial on lino cuts.
Yeah, had a little lino cut tutorial for you guys, /history/
Venus de Milo,
Venus of Willendorf, which is a Paleolithic figure, right. And we are gonna have some prints
big
and
old
totes,
titties.
Big old titties. It's one of the first fertility figures that we found 30,000 years
body
ago.
Body with a body.
Yes, we
thick
are.
Thick bitches are in.
Thick bitches are totally in. I don't care what they say. As a skinny 90s skinny is coming back. Like, who says?
Nah.
Who? Tell me who is saying that.
Well, listen, all bodies are hot, but
original stuff on you. Rubens would like it.
Rubens would like it.
So yeah, check out our Patreon. That's gonna be on there. And
yeah, thanks to our new followers. Thanks to all of you. Go ahead and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
5-star only. We're talking to you, 2-star.
We're talking
I'm
to you, 2-star.
Always gonna bring up 2-star. 2-star is the bane of my existence.
But as always, you know, thanks so much for listening. If you, you know, tell your friends, share it, shout it from the rooftops, or just keep listening.
Wow. All
right.
We love you. Bye.
Bye.